there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast was brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis, a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for the past 2 decades, 8 years of which he's been actively buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in the city on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So his company has a dedicated loan officer in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions. So you're probably already aware that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or if you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on emil.gorgis, that's emil.gorgis, emil.gorgis@tokyorealty.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so for today's episode, this is a conversation I've had recently with an Australian guy who's currently looking at buying a countryside holiday home in Japan for his own personal family use. And we talked a lot about what can be had at what budget, access, infrastructures, and most importantly, the type of due diligence and potential caveats that one needs to take into account when assessing these deals. So as always, cheaper doesn't necessarily mean a better deal. And in fact, cheaper doesn't necessarily mean cheaper either. So we talk about potential rebuild restrictions, maintenance costs, depreciation and renovations, and much, much more. A really good, informative conversation, and not too long for a change either. So I hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you again on the other side. Okay, so you've mentioned the house within an hour up to hour and a half from Tokyo or Osaka. I assume that that means by train, yeah?
Yeah, preferably by train. I can't really imagine sort of sitting on a bus for that long. But a train is sort of more comfortable for me.
Okay, no, I mean, but not you're not expecting to own a car and be driving those distances and so forth. Because that sometimes changes the commute. Like the train is actually usually a lot faster than a car. So just want to confirm which one you meant.
Yeah, so definitely a train for now.
Okay, so that probably is why you're looking at cheaper houses, according to your email, somewhere between 2.5 million to 7, right? Yen.
Yeah, so that would be sort of the comfortable range. It would feel better to be on the lower end of that range just because, this is sort of something a little bit of an experiment kind of for me. So it would be great to sort of be on the lower end. Like that's where I would feel the most comfortable, but if necessary, I can stretch up to the higher end, I think.
Okay, so I'm guessing from that budget of the properties you've been looking at, I'm guessing you're looking at stuff that was built maybe early 80s or earlier. Is that about right?
Yeah, and one of the questions that I had around that was just, you know, given the environment in Japan where you've sort of got typhoons and earthquakes occasionally, how much does that cause the older buildings to sort of turn up issues in a building inspection? Does it play a big role? I know that I've heard you say in the past that it was something like after the 1980s, I think the building codes changed.
That's for reinforced concrete structures, so the condo units and so forth.
Okay. But
I think what you're looking at is just normal wooden houses, right?
Yeah, so that would, I guess one of my other questions was how do they hold up over the years, basically?
Well, look, first off, an earthquake could always demolish a building, right? Especially a house. The ones that are of that age that you're talking about, they don't build them with very durable materials, for that reason and others, because of the natural disasters that could occur. And also, I guess maybe it's a bit of a like a unspoken agreement with housing developers that they kind of can rebuild a house every 25, 27 years. So anything that you're looking at, which is, I would say, older than 20, 25 years, would probably start stacking up in maintenance. So you might be buying them cheaply, but you'll be looking into, I'd say on average, maybe $2,000-$3,000 a year in maintenance for those older wooden homes.
Right, got it.
So I'm not sure how that factors into, I mean, yes, you'd be saving money on the purchase itself, but you're buying into expenses.
Right. Yeah. And that's really good information that will sort of feed into my decision, I think. And when, if a rebuild eventually did become necessary, what does that look like?
Well, first off, we'd probably need to do due diligence on a case-by-case basis, because some of the zoning regulations have changed over the years, and properties that were built 20, 30 years ago or more, from what you're looking at, might not qualify for the same sort of structure to be built. So depending on the access roads and how wide they are, and you know, in the past, they used to build in Japan, like there'd be a few lots that were very close together, but the access, the public access road actually only allows access into one of them. And then the neighbors would sort of have their private agreements that allow them to access their own home via a neighboring lot.
Right.
But that's not necessarily going to be something that you'd be able to rebuild legally on these days. So we need to, on a case-by-case basis, see which properties you're looking at and whether they can be rebuilt. The other thing is, if they've got a concrete base, then a rebuild will actually fall under renovation, as long as that base is kept. In which case, okay, you might be able to sidestep the rebuilding limitations and just call it a renovation officially.
Right, that's interesting. And then I know that in RAINS, the government database for property, sort of the build dates are there and everything. Does that mean that some of the properties that say that they're older may have actually been essentially rebuilt?
It's possible. The date that you see in RAINS and on the listings is usually the original build date. So it might have been that the property was, you know, kind of completely renovated all the way up from the base. If you're looking at an actual rebuild of a property from scratch, let's say you've got a land plot and you're building a, like your typical kind of modern Japanese home on it, let's say 3 or 4 bedrooms up to 100, 120 square, which is the typical house in Japan, that would usually be anywhere between 20 to 30 million yen for the build. So in Australian dollars, maybe somewhere between 230 to 350 kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's for a brand new construction, including a new base, including everything. So, I mean, right, anywhere, I would assume that anywhere above 100,000 Australian, or let's call it above 10 million yen, it's probably a better idea to consider a rebuild rather than just renovate an old structure. Because if you're going to be paying for half of that, you might as well get a new one.
Got it. Yeah.
Yeah. But basically, beyond those 25, 27 years is when they're considered fully depreciated, from a tax perspective, at least. So
okay, 25 years.
25 or 27 from memory. So you're basically, when you're purchasing something older than that, you're only paying for the land. The house is not considered to officially have any value anymore.
Okay, I see. While we're on RAINS, I found an article that talked about adding transaction history to RAINS. I was just wondering, is there any service like that that shows transaction histories of a property in Japan?
We do get this information from some of the realtors that we work with. So whether they get it from Rains or from another database, I'm not too sure, but they do occasionally have access to it. Yes. I'm not sure it's fully automated and easy to browse, but it is information that's publicly available, maybe through the Legal Affairs Bureau, who keep a history of ownership transfers and so forth. Including prices, though. Sometimes we just see that the property has changed hands on this and that date, not always going to have the prices with it.
Right, okay. That would probably help in giving me a sense of, you know, what's valuable and how the properties age and that sort of thing.
It's not going to really give you any kind of clear picture, though, because number one, they quickly depreciate, so any price that somebody might have paid for it 10 years ago might be a lot less now. And also because of Japan's deflationary environment that's kind of bottomed out late 2012, but until then, prices were trending downwards. And since then, so there are a lot of fluctuations or stagnation, depending on the area, that might sort of throw off any prices that you look at. So I wouldn't take that as anything to really go by. And also bear in mind that the realtors and the sellers that handle these cheaper properties, they're pretty much what you see is what you get. There's a limit to how many of them will actually allow pre-purchase inspections and how many of them will go out of their way to get sort of historical data, because they're aware of the fact that they're selling the properties quite cheap, so they just don't go out of their way too far.
Yeah, that makes sense. One other question I had was about seasonality. I mean, given that we're coming into sort of Christmas and New Year, are there particular months of the year where supply or demand are higher or lower than usual?
Not for older properties. That might be a case with newly developed ones, but not for older ones, no. There's not a particular season. Right. These days, if anything, prices are a little bit softer because of the couple of years we've had with COVID. But when you're looking out in the countryside, in Japan, an hour and a half from a major city is probably pretty much countryside as far as Japan's considered. So prices there are pretty stable / stagnant. They don't actually change that much. I mean, they go down as the structure gets older. But if you're looking at ones that have already fully depreciated, they're probably going to be around the same price levels any time of the year. They don't go down much further, but they're definitely not going to go up.
Okay.
So it's the centers. It's the centers of major metropolitan centers, and maybe, depending on the city, quite a few of the suburbs that do tend to go up in value when the economy does well, but not out in the sticks like these.
Yeah. And given that, you know, the properties are going to be sort of a little bit further out, one other question I had was, you know, how much does the local government in an area affect sort of the experience? I mean, is it going to be, are there particular local governments that should be avoided, or ones that are, you know, better for dealing with, or does that affect the experience at all?
What do you mean by dealing with for the purchase process, you mean?
Could be, or even just anything to do with having a property in that area, I guess.
Well, the government's not really involved in anything that you're doing. Japan doesn't have any limitations on foreign buyers. It's really a matter of the transaction between yourself, either directly or through us, and the realtor and the seller. All the government's involved in is registering the ownership transfer and then issuing you with an annual property statement. So if you're referring to how comfortable it would be to live in a particular area as opposed to another, I mean, you're out in the Japanese countryside, so I wouldn't expect too much, very English or foreigner-oriented services at local government branches. That's never going to be a thing unless you're buying in an expensive, internationally renowned area like Niseko up in Hokkaido, but that's not the budget you're talking about. I guess it'll be a matter of maybe more or less infrastructure is available, how close is the hospital, how convenient is the shopping kind of thing. But again, that's not really directly related to government. It's more a case of just the lifestyle in those particular areas.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this question came about, I mean, not because I'm specifically concerned with it, but I was reading about how even the garbage collection in an area can be different from one area to another. And that just got me thinking, you know, are there other things that may differ a lot from one area to another?
Not to a huge extent. Whichever area you're going to end up purchasing in, if it's an hour and a half from a big city, it's going to be country style living. So you can expect most services to be kind of not sporadic. I mean, it is Japan. Everything does, go by the book. And if they say they're going to be coming on a certain day of the month, they will. Just how frequently that might happen, or how convenient it would be to, deal with local authorities. We don't really have any clear mapping of any area particular to another, but I'm assuming with the budget that you're talking about and the distance from the city, I'm assuming it's going to be quite similar across the board. As in, you're not, as in, don't expect Tokyo level services.
Yeah, of course. I guess the last two questions would sort of be around various regulations. Like, I mean, one, I guess this is just asking for your opinion, but how likely is it, do you think, that there could be some form of change in regulation that impacts foreign-owned property in the future?
That's not very likely to happen. Japan's very, it's a full legal recourse country. They're not gonna, it's not like some of the horror stories you hear in Bali and Thailand where the government suddenly comes in and grabs all of your properties. That's not gonna happen here. I mean, Japan's a developed country, and if anything, it has been getting a little bit more difficult, but that's not a government policy front, just on a practical level of dealing with local bodies like the banks and the post office and so forth. So they kind of fluctuate. I mean, it was easier to open a bank account if you were not a resident up till about 2 or 3 years ago. These days, because of anti-money laundering policies, it's a little bit more difficult, but not on a government level. I wouldn't expect anything to happen on an official policy level, except the fact that, the Japanese tend to get very insular in times of crisis. So when Corona hit, for example, they didn't allow even foreign residents of Japan to enter the country for a couple of months. Again, it's not going to affect your property ownership in any way, but in times of crisis, sentiment just on the ground might shift a little bit, but nothing that will affect policies or ownership or anything of that sort.
I mean, I guess what motivated that question is that in Australia there was actually some foreign ownership law changes a few years ago, I think.
Yep, where you can only
But that, I
buy
think that
brand new
was,
developments these days, right? If you're not
yeah,
a
not sure
resident.
exactly what it is, but yeah, something along those lines. And you know, I think but I think it is a different market in that, you know, Japan is a deflationary property market, whereas Australia is generally quite inflationary when it comes to property.
Yeah, and also even I mean, I can't imagine this would happen, but even if anything like that was to happen here, it's definitely not going to be retroactively to properties that have already been purchased. It might be, something that might reflect on future purposes by other people, but not if you've already if you're already owning something, that's not going to change on you.
Okay. And I mean, one other question, it's sort of looking maybe years down the line, but if someone already owns a property in Japan, and they purchase another one, are there any sort of additional costs or penalties associated with doing that?
With owning more than one property, you mean?
Yeah.
No. If you
As
are
an individual.
no, if you are a resident, there would be certain terms that you would be able or not be able to get on the mortgage loan, but not for ownership itself, no. But loans are not available to you anyway as a non-resident, so that's not really an issue.
I think that sort of covers it on my end.
Okay, so I'm not sure if I forwarded the explanation of services document that we've got that just explains how we work and what the processes are and so forth.
Yeah, so yeah. I got that, and it looks good. I think, you know, I sort of summarized the associated costs, and it seems like it's a pretty good proposition. So, yeah, looking forward to sort of taking on board the new information and proceeding.
Okay, so as far as processes and next steps are concerned, I see that you're researching properties on your own, but once we're engaged, if you also want us to conduct additional research for you and give you more potentials, maybe from other sources, just let us know. So we can put in an hour or two of work before we're engaged, but beyond that, to do proper research and start contacting sellers and agents and so forth, we will need to be engaged. So when you're ready for that, let me know and we'll walk you through the process.
Great, that makes sense.
Okay, so that probably covers everything, but feel free to get back to me with any questions via email. And if you want me to give you just a kind of my two cents or my opinion about the properties you're already looking at, don't be shy to send me the links and I'll tell you what I think on each and every one of them.
Okay, that would be brilliant. Yeah.
All right.
I think based on this call, yeah, I probably will slightly adjust sort of what I'm looking at. I'll definitely send you some that, you know, are sort of how I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, so give me
based on how I'm thinking about it, rather. Yeah,
no problem. Give me a few samples of what you've been looking at, and I'll just I'll try to see if I can highlight anything that maybe you weren't thinking of, or just to let you know what we think the road forward would look like for costs on these particular properties and their maintenance and so forth.
Okay, great.
All right. Good speaking with you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Ziv.
Thanks. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Yes, sir.
Bye. Okay, so there you have it. There's obviously a bit more thought that needs to be given to these supposedly cheap, perfect holiday homes. Not that there are not good deals out there to be had, there definitely are, but it's important to know what you're getting into before you pull the trigger. And of course, the best thing that you can do is, as always, make sure you've got professional advice and consultation along the way. So the amount of money that professional representation can save you just in costly mistakes, negotiation options, and of course the time and the energy, as well as the fact that it helps you gain access to the entire market here, as opposed to only those particular sellers and realtors who are able and willing to work with foreigners, and there's not many of them out there, especially in the countryside. This far exceeds the expense that's actually involved in hiring someone, which is in any case minute when compared with the actual price of a real estate property. So our advice here, as always, is to work with a local entity. We're always happy to assist, of course, but depending on the area that you're interested in, there could be others out there as well. So just make sure to choose someone who can represent you and your interests, as well as to provide you with knowledgeable, professional advice every step of the way. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.